Okay, so you want me to read the purport? Thank you very much. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. It's a long purport. Very informative, lots of information here. Please bear with me as I read it. As described in the previous chapter, the difference between the super soul, the Supreme Lord, and the living entities is that the activities of the Lord in creating the cosmic manifestation are performed by the Lord through the agency of his multifarious energies. But this manifestation is bewildering to the living entities. The Lord is therefore the master of the energies, whereas the living entities are subjected by them. By making various questions about transcendental activities, Vidura is clearing the misconceptions that when the Lord either descends on the earth in his incarnation or appears himself with all his potencies, he too is subjected to the influence of Maya, just like an ordinary living entity. This is generally the calculation of less intelligent philosophers who consider the position of the Lord and that of the living entities to be on the same level. Vidura is hearing the great sage Maitreya refute these arguments. The Lord is described in the verse as Chinmatra, or completely spiritual. The personality of Godhead has unlimited potencies to create and manifest many wonderful things, both temporary and permanent. Because this material world is the creation of his external energy, it thus appears to be temporary. It is manifested at certain intervals, maintained for some time, and again dissolved and conserved in his own energy. As described in Bhagavad Gita 8.19, Bhutva Bhutva Praliyate. But the creation of his internal potency, the spiritual world, is not a temporary manifestation like the material world, but is eternal and full of transcendental knowledge, opulence, energy, strength, beauties, and glories. Such manifestations of the Lord's potencies are eternal and are therefore called nirguna, or free from all tinges of the modes of material nature, even up to the mode of material goodness. The spiritual world is transcendental even to material goodness, and thus is unchangeable. Since the Supreme Lord of such eternal and unchangeable qualities is never subjugated by anything like material influence, how can his activities and form be conceived to be under the influence of illusory Maya, as is the case with the living entities? A juggler or magician displays many wonders with his acts and arts. He can become a cow by his magical tactics, and yet he is not that cow. But at the same time, the cow displayed by the magician is not different from him. Similarly, the material potency is not different from the Lord, because it is an emanation from him. But at the same time, that manifestation of potency is not the Supreme Lord. The Lord's transcendental knowledge and potency always remains the same. They do not change even when displayed in the material world. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord descends on the earth by his own internal potency, and therefore there is no question of his becoming materially contaminated, changed, or otherwise affected by the modes of material nature. The Lord is saguna by his own internal potency, but at the same time he is nirguna, since he is not in touch with the material energy. The restrictions of the prison house are applicable to prisoners who are condemned by the king's laws, But the king is never affected by such implications. Although he may visit the prison house out of his goodwill, in the Vishnu Purana, the six opulences of the Lord are stated to be non-different from him. The opulences of transcendental knowledge, strength, opulence, potency, beauty, and renunciation are all identical with the personality of Godhead. When he personally displays such opulences in the material world, they have no connection with the modes of material nature. Bear with me, still some more. The very word chinmatrava is the guarantee that the Lord's activities are always transcendental, even when displayed in the material world. His activities are as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, liberated devotees like Shukadev Goswami would not have been attracted by them. Vidura inquired how the Lord's activities can be in the modes of material nature, as is sometimes miscalculated by persons with a poor fund of knowledge. The inebriety of the material qualities is due to the difference between the material body and the spirit soul. The conditioned soul's activities are displayed through the medium of the modes of material nature and are therefore perverted in appearance. However, the Lord's body and the Lord himself are one and the same, and when the Lord's activities are displayed, they are certainly non-different from the Lord in all respects. The conclusion is that persons who consider the Lord's activities material are certainly mistaken. That's the conclusion. So, Om Ajnanita Mirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshum Militam Jena Tasmeshi Gurave Namaha Sri Taitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swabhadantekam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurum Vaishnavam Chha Sri Rupam Sagarjatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tham Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Chha Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopisha, Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute, Tapta Kanchana Gorangi, Radhe Vrindavanishwari, Vrishabhanu Suti Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye, Vanchakalpatyubhyascha, Kripa Sindhubhivacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo Namaha, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktavinda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So, very wonderful purport, so much information. I could have gone in many different directions, but I decided to basically talk about how, okay, and I'm going to be using, okay, so I see we have these big screens here. As I talk, you can take your pick. You can also look at a screen. I'll accompany my presentation, my class, with the visuals as well. So this is a classic painting of Mahavishnu coming into the material manifestation. And we have here also this beautiful painting in the back here. I remember it actually needed restoration some years back, and it's actually gotten nicely restored. It's a classic painting of the total cosmic manifestation. So the idea is that most of the total manifestation is three-fourths is in the spiritual world. It is transcendental. It is the non-dual reality of transcendence. One-fourth of the total cosmic manifestation is here in the material world, and even that is like, how can we even comprehend? So I'll be going over some of this. So, of course, the famous verse, Janma Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yo Veti Tattvata Taktva Deham Punar Janma Naitimam Eti Su Arjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in the material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. So we need to understand how Krishna has manifest. Yes, many discussions are there of Krishna's activities, but we're going to discuss mostly today how he manifests. We're also going to get into some pastimes and activities as well. So here, it's a very similar painting on the left. And I included here on the right this famous picture on the Easy Journey to Other Planets where the yogi is in his meditation. All the chakras we can see here are illuminated. But what's he meditating on? Do you see what he's meditating on? You tell me. What's he meditating on? Radha and Krishna. Who do we meditate on? Who is our focus of worship in Chaitanya Vaishnavism? Is Radha and Krishna. So these illustrations are there. Prabhupada established them for the cover of the Bhagavatam because they illustrate so much information. This petal of the lotus, or the whirl of the lotus flower, the central part of the lotus flower, is there as a depiction of Goloka Vrindavan. Now, this is a Bhagavatam from the artwork from the original Bhagavatam. Prabhupada had this artwork commissioned. But we knew some of the original artists, they immediately got to work on this elaboration of illustrating the spiritual world and that quarter manifestation where Mahavishnu comes in. Okay? And every time Goloka Vrindavan is depicted as the whirl of a lotus flower. Okay. So, this beginning stage is Krishna. Krishna is the source of everything. From Krishna, who comes? Krishna. From Krishna, his first expansion, Balaram. Radharani also expands. We're not going to get into the feminine side. We're going to get just right into the how Balaram further expands, and it gets complicated really fast. From Balaram comes the first, called Chaturvyuha, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. And then there's a second Chaturvyuha from Narayan, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is too much. What's going on? And then it's from that second Sankarshan comes the Mahavishnu. It's the second Sankarshan. So Mahavishnu as big, and how big is Mahavishnu, by the way? He's pretty big. He's pretty big. The material scientists, they look out into the cosmos, they look in and they see that, oh, we're living in this galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy. Most of the stars at night, people see that's all coming from the Milky Way galaxy. But with their telescopes, they know, oh, by the way, there's many, many galaxies. How many galaxies? Does anyone know? Do we have any scientists in the class today? How many galaxies are in the universe? Huh? Billions. Billions. So one universe is like pretty big, isn't it? You can't, what they call the knowable universe is unlimited. They can't really calculate. Billions of galaxies. We just simply live in one galaxy with our solar system. And from the Bhagavatam, we know we live in a multiverse. The scientists are also using this term, we live in a multiverse. From their calculations of quantum mechanics, they have speculated correctly, you know, that we live in a multiverse, that this universe is not the only universe. What they cannot know is that ultimately all these multi-universes are coming from the body of Karana Dakshai Vishnu, the big Vishnu. As he breathes out, all these universes expand. As he breathes in, they come back into his body. That's a long breath. And that's a big Vishnu. He's the big Vishnu. Okay, we'll get to the small Vishnu. But first we have to understand the big Vishnu, Karana Dakshai Vishnu. And so then within each and every universe, gotta watch it when I touch the screen here. Each and every universe comes the Garbho Dakshai Vishnu. Can everyone read it? Maybe it's, I don't know. It's okay. And that's where Vishnu is laying on the Sheshanag. Lakshmi is massaging his feet from his navel. That's where the Brahma, the lotus flower is there. The Lord Brahma is meditating. And from there expands another Vishnu. This is the Shirodakshai Vishnu. Shiro means the ocean of milk. So here we have Shirodakshai Vishnu coming from the Garbho Dakshai Vishnu. So there is a planet where this Shirodakshai Vishnu, Prabhupada explains, it's close to the pole star. There is a planet where this Shirodakshai Vishnu resides. And this is where the demigods go to when they want to petition Lord Vishnu. But this Shirodakshai Vishnu, he further expands himself. Okay, we're getting really complicated now. This is spiritual technology. This is good. We have so much mundane technology. This is spiritual technology. And so I was hoping this graph would help illustrate. So from Shirodakshai Vishnu, we have teeny, tiny, tiny, tiny Vishnu within each and every atom. The Paramatma Vishnu in each atom. And we have the Paramatma, a second manifestation of Paramatma, is within the heart of every living entity. Okay, but they're all coming from this Shirodakshai Vishnu. So we have the big Vishnu, and we have the teeny, teeny, tiny Vishnu within each and every atom and within the heart of each living entity. So Krishna expands into Balaram. Then we have the first Chaturvyuha, second Chaturvyuha. I'm going through this quickly, Mahavishnu. Now I'm going into another side aspect of this, how Krishna comes into the material world. Mahavishnu is the same as Sadashiva, okay? So who do we know as Sadashiva and Mahavishnu combined? Advaita Acharya, right? Srila Prabhupada has explained in some purports that Advaita Acharya is Mahavishnu. In other purports, he explains that Advaita Acharya is Sadashiva. So there are references, I've looked up, I've got the references, where Prabhupada actually says that Sadashiva, Mahavishnu, Advaita Acharya, they're one and the same. There's no difference. In other words, Advaita Acharya is Vishnu Tattva. He's not Shiva Tattva, he's totally an expansion of Mahavishnu. Now, I'm going to bring this up, but I'm going to come back to it a little later in the class. That same Sadashiva manifests in two other forms. Nilakant, in the eighth canto, the Vishnu form that drinks the poison, the halahala poison, that's called Nilakant. That's also Sadashiva. Now it gets really, we're talking about confusing here. Wait a second, I thought we're talking about Mahavishnu. Well, that's true. So Sadashiva is Mahavishnu. That Nilakant is very confusing because he's actually Vishnu in disguise. Externally, Shiva, internally, Vishnu. And the same thing with Gopeshwar Mahadev. That's a whole topic. I've written an article about this in Back to Godhead magazine, but I was not able to put this esoteric aspect into it, where Gopishvara Mahadev in Vrindavan is the guardian of the Dham. And he's worshipped as a Shiva Lingam. Nandi is there. All the externals are there as a worship of Shiva. But for the Vrajavasis, they understand that actually he's Sada Shiva, he is Mahavishnu, and on the appearance day of Advaita Acharya, all the Vrajavasis go to the temple of Panchatattva in Vrindavan, right? Aha, there is no temple of Panchatattva. They go to the temple, to the shrine of Gopishvara Mahadev, knowing that Advaita Acharya, Gopishvara Mahadev are actually not just similar, but they're the same. So they glorify and they worship Advaita Acharya through the agency of Gopishvara Mahadev. Okay, I hope I got everyone thoroughly confused, because it is confusing. It's not easy. Okay, let's continue, though. I have a lot more information. So here, Vishnu as the super soul. And so Vishnu within the atom and Vishnu within the heart of the meditating yogi. Now, this meditating yogi, though, he's that same meditating yogi that we were just talking about. So Vishnu within the heart, for the devotee, the yogi is meditating on Radha and Krishna. That's the crown chakra. Now, Prabhupada doesn't talk about the chakra system except in one purport I found. Prabhupada, in the fourth canto, Prabhupada talks about the chakra system. This information can be used for preaching purposes, especially for bridge preaching, for people who are interested in yoga and meditation. Yes, we understand. We're actually the only spiritual group that understands what the crown chakra is. The crown chakra is Goloka Vrindavan. Who do we worship? We worship Radha and Krishna to attain that final goal of Goloka Vrindavan. There they are right now. Jai Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai Guchichi Gonitai Ki Jai. This is our goal. This is why Krishna consciousness is the topmost yoga system. We understand what the goal is. The goal is the crown chakra. The goal is Goloka Vrindavan. The goal is that transcendental realm of, it's non-dual, it's the spiritual realm, but infinite variety, where every jivatma has a unique, loving, personal relationship with Krishna. So that painting, Prabhupada had this painting commissioned, Easy Journey to Other Planets. So, back to, there's Krishna in the super soul. Now, this illustration, here we have the chakra system again, and I have superimposed over the meditating yogi. Does anyone recognize what this is? Does anyone know what this is called? It's called the caduceus staff. Now, where have we seen this before, the caduceus staff? Egypt. Yes, actually, Egypt borrowed it from India. In the ancient cultures, these things were understood. The caduceus staff is a modern symbol, emblem, used in what? Medicine. We have any doctors here in the house? Any students of medicine? Maybe in our audience, as many people are students of medicine. They do not teach in medical school what the caduceus staff is about. The caduceus staff is a replica of the chakra system. If only they knew. If only they were to teach the doctors. There goes the Vishnu within the heart, goes into the chakra system. And that yogi is also with the illumined crown chakra, meditating on Radha and Krishna. So on the right side here, the medical corps, they wear this emblem of the caduceus staff. It's the intertwining snakes of the Ida and Pingala within the body of the chakra systems. And they say this is for medicine. So it's for physical health, but it's much more. It's for mental, emotional, psychological health. And ultimately, the symbol of the caduceus is a symbol of spiritual health. So what do you think? Can this be utilized for for bridge preaching, to talking to the yoga and meditation students that actually, they're interested in these things, meditation, chakras, but no one has taught them what the how this relates to modern society, modern day symbolism used in medicine, and how ultimately the Hare Krishna movement, we have the ultimate goal of the chakra system, the crown chakra is on our altar. Radha and Krishna is our focal point of meditation. Okay, now getting back to the atom. So Vishnu is within the atom. Maybe we have some nuclear physicists in the audience. I don't know. Maybe not. There's something called the strong nuclear force. Now, an atom is 99.9% empty space. So if I'm knocking on this piece of wood, I'm knocking on space. There's nothing there, except a little bit. It's mostly space. So these illustrations are not to scale. So the force required, though, to keep the positively charged protons together with a neutron is tremendous. It could be called the really strong nuclear force. So the material scientist, they know the strong nuclear force exists, but they have no understanding of how that force exists. Have you ever taken magnets, positively charged magnets, and tried to push them together? They push. So within each and every atom, how many atoms are in this microphone stand? Trillions. You can understand. But within each and every atom, the nucleus, which is teeny, teeny, tiny, is just being held together by this strong force. So we understand that we are spiritual scientists. We understand that strong nuclear force is Vishnu, Paramatma. We cannot say that Krishna or Vishnu cannot expand within each and every atom. He can do it. He can do anything. So science tells us the why and what. The spiritual science of the Bhagavatam tells us the how and the who. So that we agree with the scientists. There is a strong nuclear force. They recognize it, but they have no conception of what that force is. That's their problem. Science teaches us about matter. The Bhagavatam teaches us what really matters. Science explores our material dreams. The Bhagavatam reveals the reality. This is the reality of what's going on. Now, do we expect the material scientists to come to the conclusion by looking into the atom that this is what they're going to look at? No. They have something called the Higgs boson, the God particle. They're looking within the atom. Well, there the God particle is. Isn't he there? But they can't see it. They're not students of the spiritual science of the Bhagavatam. We're students of the science of the Bhagavatam. There is that God particle. There is Vishnu that they're looking for, but they can't find it. Now here, does anyone recognize what's going on here? Shiva Nataraj, what did I bring this up for? Yes? CERN. Yeah, what's CERN? Yes, this is the largest scientific experimentation going on in the world today. It's called the Large Hadron Collider, LHC, the most powerful particle accelerator ever built, located in a tunnel 100 meters underground at CERN. This is where Switzerland and I'm not sure exactly where it's located. But here, they have in the courtyard of this gigantic particle accelerator, a huge statue of Nataraj. Now, why would they do that? What happened? And all these scientists are applauding it. Yay, here's our God particle, at least they think. And here at night, this Nataraj cast a shadow on their building. So the Nataraj statue represents Shiva's cosmic dance of creation and destruction, which is a metaphor for the study of subatomic physics. The ring around the figure of Nataraj represents the continuous creation and destruction of the universe as well as mass, space, and time. So Lord Shiva as Nataraj is very significant here. I don't know if you can read this. I'll read it, although it's completely Mayavadi in nature. Because they're quoting from Adi Shankaracharya here. This is a plate underneath the Nataraj there. It says, "Oh, omnipresent, the embodiment of all virtues, the creator of this cosmic universe, the king of dancers who dances the Ananda Tandava in the twilight, I salute thee." And this is from a statement by Adi Shankara. And this is presented by the Department of Atomic Energy by the government of India. So this CERN project is actually multinational. India presented this dance of Nataraj because they're trying to find the God particle. but they're not reading the Bhagavatam. How can they understand? So back in 1975, the Tao of Physics, this guy over here on the left, his name is Srichjap Kapra, he wrote a book, The Tao of Physics. It was revolutionary in his time, 1975. It's a book that brought the mystical implications of subatomic physics to popular consciousness. Now I have over here on the left our own scientist who's no longer with us. His Grace Sataputta Prabhu is my godbrother, Prabhupada disciple. Has anyone heard of Sataputta? Yes, of course. A few, many of you. Good. Yeah, he was a devotee scientist, but he was a genius. He was way out of the league of every other devotee. He wrote many books, God and Science, Mechanistic and Non-Mechanistic Science, Forbidden Archaeology, The Hidden History of the Human Race, along with Druta Karma or Michael Cremo, Vedic Cosmology and Astronomy, Mysteries of the Sacred Universe. This is actually what they're using at the TOVP for constructing the diorama of the universe according to the Vedic cosmology. Origins magazine. Has anyone seen Origins magazine? Yeah, but it's a long time ago. They should republish that. It's fantastic. Alien Identities. Oh my gosh, Sataputta was into UFOs because that's in the Vedas. It's in the Vedas. What do they call Vimanas? Okay. How long do I have to go on for this class? Can I go a little over time or no? Everyone's okay. I'll try and go through it as fast as I can. So speaking of aliens, here we have Lord Shiva. And one of the prominent verses that Prabhupada would always quote, Aradhananam Sarvesham, Vishnu Aradhanam Param Tasmat Paritanam Devi Tadinam, Samarchanam. Of all types of worship, worship of Lord Vishnu is the best. And better than the worship of Lord Vishnu is the worship of his devotee, the Vaishnava. Okay, so Lord Shiva is... We're talking about that yogi in meditation on Radha and Krishna. Shiva is in meditation on Sankarshan. Now go back to those charts of the Chaturvyuhas. It's all coming from Sankarshan. The Mahavishnu is coming from Sankarshan. Everything's coming from Sankarshan. So Lord Shiva, as the topmost Vaishnava, is meditating on Sankarshan. That's his meditation. And then Parvati... She's saying, my position is secure, my Lord. You are the best devotee of Lord Vishnu, and I am your eternal servant. So this is a whole topic in and of itself, how Lord Shiva fits into Krishna consciousness. So back to the chart again. Now, okay, I'll try and read through this very quickly. So this is a purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam 8.7.22. Lord Vishnu acts through Lord Shiva in the creation of the material world. So in the beginning of my class, we're talking about how Krishna comes into the material world and how to understand how he comes into the material world. His manifestations is purely spiritual, but he's coming into the material world through Lord Shiva as part of the creation. You know, so he acts through Lord Shiva in the creation of the material. When Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that he is the seed-giving father of all living entities, Aham Bija Pradapita, this refers to actions performed by Lord Vishnu through Lord Shiva. When material activities are to be performed, Lord Vishnu performs them through Lord Shiva. When Lord Vishnu is untouched by the external energy, he is Lord Vishnu. But when he is in touch with the external energy, he appears in his feature as Lord Shiva. This is a big topic in and of itself. I can't get into all the explanation right now. But this is important to understand that actually Lord Shiva is also part of this formula. And here, down at the bottom now, we have this progression. Mahavishnu, the Karanadakshai Vishnu, the big Vishnu, that goes into Sadashiva, and then Sadashiva goes into Advaita Acharya, Gopishwar Mahadev, and Nilakant. And there we have a picture, an illustration of Mahavishnu. On top of him is Advaita Acharya. Next to Mahavishnu is a... Has anyone been to the Gopishwar Mahadev shrine in Vrindavan? Raise your hands. A few. Okay. Very important, actually. Srila Rupa Goswami describes this is the actual way to enter Vrindavan is through this agency of Sadashiva, Gopishwar Mahadev. And we just described also Nilakant is that self-same Lord Shiva. He deals with the issues that Shankarshan deals. Shankarshan is in charge of Ahankara. So Gopishwar Mahadev and Nilakant drinking the ocean of poison, it's very symbolic. These stories are real, but they're also taken in a metaphysical way. The Halahala poison, that's Ahankara. That's Ahankara. So this is how Sadashiva manifests to help us. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has given us this beautiful prayer to Gopishwara. Vrindavanave pate jaya soma soma mole sanaka sanandana sanatana nara deja Gopishwara vraja valase yugangri padme prema prayacha nirupadi namo namaste. Now this verse is not to be found in Srila Prabhupada's books, but Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati chanted it, as well as many of our Vaishnava Acharyas. It means, O gatekeeper of Vrindavan, O Lord of the Gopis, O Soma, all glories to you, O you whose forehead is decorated with the moon and who is worshipful by great sages such as Sanaka, Sanandan, Sanatan, and Narada Muni, O Gopishwara, desiring that you bestow upon me pure love for the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna, perform joyous pastimes in Vrajadam, I offer my obeisances unto you again and again. So here in Bhaktivedanta manner, our ultimate goal is to achieve that Vrindavandam, that Golokadam, that peace of the spiritual world that is even beyond the Vaikuntha planets. This is the whole benediction of Lord Chaitanya is coming to give the highest realization of God realization, the intimacy of connecting with Krishna in Goloka Dham. And we have to understand this science and understand, yes, it's complicated, so many Vishnu forms and how it all works, but this is who we are. This is who we're about. Now, I just wanted to end with this last bit here. This is showing a Shiva Lingam on the right, and it says Shishi Radha Madan Mohan in Goloka Dham, Germany. And there's a picture of Shishi Radha Madan Mohan just to, in the middle there, bottom. This Shiva Lingam has had a groundbreaking ceremony last May. This Shiva Lingam is actually going to be introduced as Gopishwar Mahadev in Germany, in Goloka Dham. This will be the second manifestation of Gopishwar Mahadev into ISKCON. There's a trend coming, I would like to think. So with that bit of information, I think I better cut it short and ask for any questions, comments, chastisements for this strange class. Yes, Adi Guru.
Thank you. What does it mean that
Yes, Gopeshwara. He's the Lord of the gopis. The gopis worshipped Lord Shiva. They worship Katyayani too. The Prabhupada explains this in the Bhagavatam purport. And last time I checked, the gopis are still pretty important in the Hare Krishna movement. And I think they always will be. They're expansions of Radharani. So Gopeshwara is the Lord of the gopis in this specific form as Sadashiva. So generally we don't talk about Shiva worship. Krishna worship good, Shiva worship bad, right? But in this specific form, very good. He helps us develop our love for Radha and Krishna. So anyway, there is an article. It's available online. I can tell devotees how to get there. You just type in the Enigma of Gopeshwara Mahadev. It comes up. You don't have to have the magazine, but the online article is there. So anyone going to Vrindavan should know this principle, how to enter Vrindavan. Very important. Again, this is spiritual technology. The more we understand this technology, the better off we'll be in achieving the ultimate end of pure love for Radha and Krishna. Is that okay, or you want to? Okay. Yeah.
Thank you for the very clear presentation on a complex subject. I just wanted clarification on one point. The spiritual world is three quarters of the cosmic manifestation. Is that to be understood, I don't know what the word is, allegorically?
Because no, literally. It is three-fourths.
But then, I mean, the question always arises, if the spiritual world is infinite, how can you have three-quarters of infinity?
This is just, I mean, it's used as a way of comprehending it. These things are ultimately beyond our comprehension. But in order to frame it into our mind of logical thinking, we have to think in terms of three-fourths, one-fourth. So the material world, one-fourth, and we live in that multiverse. How big is that? We can't imagine how big it is. How big is the spiritual world? Infinitely larger than the material world. So yes, the three-fourths, one-fourth analogy Prabhupada gives, but this is just a framework to go on. It's okay? You want to say any more? Yeah, these are things to meditate on. Thank you. These are part of our, we're also yogis in meditation. These are concepts, metaphysical, spiritual concepts to think about, to meditate on. Yes. Other questions, comments, thoughts? Mataji?
Thank you for the presentation. So I work in a school, and yesterday an 11-year-old child came to me, and she was like, "Miss, I'm having an existential crisis." And
11-year-old? That's very young. That's good, though. Go ahead.
So according to my knowledge of Krishna consciousness, I was trying to explain the purpose of life, why we're here, and she just kept asking, "But why?" And it kept going on like that. And I guess I...
But why what? What do you mean when she says, but why? What's the why in reference to?
Everything that I was saying. So if I said that we've turned away from the Lord and this life is an opportunity for us to develop love for him and return to him. And she said, but why? Like, why do we need to... Why did the Lord create it in that way? And I wasn't sure what to say at the end. Why does it have to be so complicated?
Well, you know, you can always say, but why? But why? It's like a toddler or something saying, why? And you say, shut up. You know, don't ask anymore. But for an 11-year-old, they may be hard to understand too much philosophy. Maybe if they're, you know, inquisitive. But ultimately, yeah, you have to have some philosophical frame of mind to understand the why behind these explanations about Krishna consciousness. So maybe that young existential crisis will continue into her adolescent teenage years, and someone should be giving her a book, and she, as she learns more and more, she can understand the why. But yeah, these things cannot be easily explained in a quick conversation, the why behind what is Krishna consciousness and the goal of Krishna consciousness, why we're doing everything we're doing, why we're worshipping the deities, why we're chanting Hare Krishna, why we're focused on, you know, these regular principles and chanting our japa and the guru, everything. The why comes a little bit later. For 11-year-olds, it's going to be hard. You just maintain friendship. So as you see them grow up, you can introduce the why later. That's my best answer. It's okay. Yeah, yeah. many times, young people go through an existential crisis in their teenage years as they're realizing that they have to mature and become an adult, and they have to have a career, and they have to think about what kind of a spouse they're going to want, what kind of, you know, what kind of philosophical orientation. So actually, many times when the devotees are preaching in college situations, it's actually very good. Many of the students are undergoing a crisis of identity. Who am I? What am I doing? What's the purpose of life? Oh, the Hare Krishnas say it's about, you know, going back to the spiritual world. Is that real, or is that just some make-believe mythology? So it's good, actually, to preach to people who are undergoing this youthful identity crisis. And people can go through an identity crisis throughout their life. Like there's a midlife identity crisis as well. And then at the end of life, it's like, what have I done? I've wasted my life. Identity crisis. Best to get them young while they're going through that crisis so that we can not brainwash them, as people like to think, but educate them and get them to thinking about actually what do the Vedas have to offer, what does the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition have to offer, this spiritual technology, which we just went over through very quickly and very briefly. It's complex. Some people say, it's too much, it gives me a headache. Easier to be a Buddhist. Just think about nothing. And actually, atoms are made of nothing anyway, 99.9% nothing. They say they have a point, it's all nothing anyway. But there's that 0.01% something, that's Krishna. Yeah.
Once Srila Prabhupada was asked, what is the meaning of life? Why?
Yeah.
Big why. Prabhupada said, for happiness, pleasure, this is the real meaning.
Yes, yes. Anandavayabhyasat. The reason for our existence is happiness, is pleasure. That's what everyone's looking for. They go to the university. Where are they going? Studying hard, giving up a life so that they can get a life, get a career, so they can attract a spouse, so they can have a family, so they can have a position in society and prestige and honor and respect, and that derive pleasure from that. Okay? For a devotee, of course, we understand the illusory aspects of that kind of sense of identity. So it's not that we don't pursue careers, but our real sense of happiness and enjoyment and pleasure comes from Krishna conscious activities, practicing Krishna consciousness in the association of devotees, and when it's done nicely, it's extremely sweet, it's extremely relishable, it's extremely pleasurable. So, you know, the purpose of life is pleasure, happiness. Is that okay? Okay, it's getting late, unless someone else has something to say. I think we should...
Jai. His Grace Ramanav Sukha Prabhu Ki Jai.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.